Well, good morning. I want to start today's sermon by showing you some of these cancer ads. Now, these cancer ads are shocking. They are meant to be shocking. That's the whole idea of them. They are meant to shock people into the realization that smoking is deadly. But why do people still smoke? Surely they have seen these ads. These ads, after all, are on the cigarette packets. Surely they have been shocked. Well, the reason why people still smoke is because they've actually become accustomed to these ads. They've become acclimatated to them. Just like if you were to put a frog into boiling water, it will jump straight out of it. But if you warm it up slowly, it becomes acclimatized to the water until the point of death. Well, it's the same with today's parable. This parable is both shocking and, unfortunately, many of us have become accustomed to it. Today we need to be shocked. We need to be shocked once again like we were shocked the first time we heard this parable. See, we should be shocked at this parable. It is shocking. But it is not shocking for the reasons that we think. It's not a bad shock. We should be shocked out of joy. It'd be like if you left your wallet on a bus full of cash in the dodgy area of town. You've just come to terms with all the cash is gone. You have to cancel all your cards. You go into the police station to report your wallet lost, and it gets handed over to you with all your cards there and with all your cash still there. You would be completely shocked and amazed that that could actually happen. And it's the same with today's parable. We should be shocked like this. Now, the background to this parable is, in the beginning of Luke 15, we see Jesus eating with tax collectors and sinners. This would have been completely shocking to the Jewish leaders of the time. It just wasn't done. You don't associate with sinners and tax collectors if you're a teacher. And upon hearing of this shock, Jesus tells three parables about losing things. And with each of the parables, what is lost greatly increases. The first parable, one sheep is lost out of 100 sheep. The second parable, one coin is lost out of 10 coins. And the third parable, which is today's parable, one child is lost out of two children. Now, the rebellion of the youngest son in today's parable would have been completely unacceptable in Jesus' time. By asking for his inheritance early, the youngest son was basically saying to his father, "Father, I wish you were dead. I no longer want to be part of this family." It just simply was not done. And telling this parable would have completely shocked everybody in Jesus' audience. The child was being extremely rebellious. And under Jewish law, the father could have rightfully taken his child to the elders and had him stoned to death. But the father does something that shocks everyone. He doesn't take his son to the elders. Instead, he does the unthinkable and gives him what he asks for, his inheritance, being one third of everything that the father owned. And the son departs to go live the the high life. Now, what would you have done? Would you have let your son do this? Or would you have punished your son, taken him to the elders? Would you have done what the rebellious son did? Would you basically have told your father, I wish you were dead? Well, we all have done exactly what the rebellious son has done to our heavenly father. We have all said to him, no, God, I want to live my own way. And what the rebellious son does is no different to what Adam and Eve did back in Genesis 3. They said, no, God, I want to follow my own ways, the ways of the world, the ways of the devils, not your ways. Well, sure enough, to no one's shock, the son's money runs out and he's left in a foreign country when a severe famine hits with no money. The only person that was shocked that his money ran out was the son's. And he's now even more shocked that he has to work with pigs. A extremely shocking thing for a Jewish person to do. And you can just hear the Pharisees cheering now, can't you? Saying, he's finally got what he deserves. He's wasted his father's money and he's now forced to work with the lowest of lows, animals, and eat pig's food. Justice has prevailed. Well, the rebellious son comes up with a plan. He works out that his life will be much better as a servant in his father's household. See, he knows that his father is a loving man and that he treats his servants well. So the rebellious son, still putting himself first, packs up his stuff and heads back to his father to try and save himself. Now, don't get me wrong here. I don't believe that the actual son was trying to get reinstated as a rightful heir of the family. But he was definitely using his relationship with his father to get a job. See, after all, he's not trained as being a servant. He's already proven that he can't manage money. And there's a severe famine on. So there would have been an influx of skilled servants looking for work. Now we're just like that rebellious son, aren't we? Trying to work out how to fix things ourselves. Trying to please God by our own actions and earn our way back into his household. Now the Pharisees definitely were. They'd come up with their own set of laws to stop people from breaking God's laws. Now this in itself is not a bad thing. And if you struggle in an area of your life, it's actually good to set up boundaries. But the problem that the Pharisees had is that these boundaries, they turned into God's laws. And it was all about works for them, not about a relationship with God. So the son returns home to beg for a job with his father. And something extremely shocking happens here. Something that no one would have expected. And his audience were completely shocked. While he was still a long way off, the father spots the son and runs and greets him. Now we would think that this is a nice and appropriate reaction. And if you've ever spent any time at an airport arrival hall, you would say this is a normal reaction. People run and hug each other. They embrace each other with a kiss, crying. You even see people jumping into the arms of their loved ones. But for Jesus' hearers, this reaction would have been extremely shocking. It is very undignifying for an elderly Jewish man to run, to hitch up his robes and run. It just didn't happen. And to greet someone with a kiss was only reserved for close friends and family members. The father's reaction to his son was one of love for a family member. Jesus' audience would not have expected this at all. How could the father do this? The son had said to the father, "I wish you were dead. I want nothing to do with your family." The father's reaction would have been expected to turn his back on the son. But the father shocks everyone by telling the servant to go get the best robe, put a ring on his finger, and put sandals on his feet. Now the best robe in the house would have belonged to the father. The ring most likely would have been the family signet ring. And servants do not wear sandals, but instead carry them for their masters and put them on their feet. The father's reaction shows that this rebellious son has been welcomed back into the family as a rightful son. The father didn't want his son to be a servant, but instead a rightful son. The father ordered the servants to kill the fattened calf and arrange a feast. Now the fattened calf would have been big enough to feed the whole village. And noble families of the time would kill fattened calves and invite the whole family, whole village along on special occasions, like a wedding or a child becoming of age. The father wanted the whole village to know that the son has returned and he has been welcomed back into the family. He is not hiding the son, despite that's what would have been expected. After all, his son had brought a great amount of shame on the family. So much shame that he could have rightfully been stoned to death for the amount of shame that he brought on the family. Now, this would have blown the minds of the Pharisees. See, they had had a go at Jesus for eating with sinners and tax collectors. And the Pharisees now would have realized that these sinners and tax collectors are the rebellious son in this story. They would have been completely shocked at the wealthy Jewish man's reaction for the rebellious son, that he'd been welcomed back into the family. And they've now realized that this is exactly the same with the sinners and tax collectors that Jesus is eating with. They have been welcomed back into God's family. The Pharisees' day is just about to get a whole lot worse. Enter in the older brother, someone who they can associate with, someone who could possibly talk some sense into the father, because clearly the father has lost his mind. And we read from verse 25, "Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called to one of the servants and asked him, 'What is going on?' 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he who is dead is back safe and sound.'" The older brother becomes angry and refuses to go in. So the father goes out to plead with him. But he answered the father, "Look, all these years I've slaved for you and never disobeyed you. And you don't even give me a young goat that I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." Now, the brother's reaction would not have shocked anyone. It was a reasonable response given the circumstances. The Pharisees definitely would have thought so. The older brother has a point, doesn't he? After all, this younger brother had wished his father was dead, had wanted nothing to do with the family, had spent all their money. And when the money ran out, he came running home. Why would you be happy? Why would you want to celebrate? But look at the father's response. My son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Once again, the father shocks everyone. He responds out of love and joy. His son who was dead is alive. There's no question about it. This deserves celebration. This deserves a party. But see, the older brother, he's jealous. He's thinking about himself. He's worried about his inheritance. He doesn't want to share any more of his inheritance with his brother, even though his inheritance is secure. It hasn't changed. He still does not want his brother back. He thinks just because he has stayed and obeyed his father, he rightfully deserves his inheritance. See, the older brother thinks that it is by his works that he gets the inheritance. And he's got it so wrong. The inheritance has nothing to do with his works. He doesn't deserve the inheritance based on what he has done. He, like his brother, only deserves the inheritance based on his father's actions. The inheritance is a gift from God, from his father, not based on what he has done. Now you can imagine what the Pharisees are thinking now, aren't you? They've been completely shocked by the rebellious son's actions. They've been blown away by the father's love and having associated themselves with the older brother in the story. They realize that they've been following God's laws, but they've still got it so wrong. And I think that's something that we struggle with today. I know I do. We compare ourselves against other people. We say they can't be saved. They're too bad. For example, Hitler, Bin Laden, Pol Pot, a serial child sex abuser, a terrorist, or how about something really close to home? Someone who has murdered one of your family members. Can these people be saved? Should we take the gospel to these people? Would you be happy if these people were saved? And the hardest question of all, would you rejoice in their salvation? Now, these questions are tough to answer, honestly. But what this passage shows us is that all people can be saved. See, it's not our actions that determine whether we are saved. The rebellious son definitely would have fallen into the list of people I just spoke about. He wished his own father was dead. He associated with prostitutes. He squandered away his father's property. This son would have normally been disowned, an outcast, disowned by his family, disowned by his friends, definitely not deserving of salvation. So the question for us is, who will we be like in this story? We've already seen that we are all like the rebellious son. We have all turned from God's ways for our life to follow our own desires. But thankfully, God has done something about that. He has sent his son to die on a cross, to take the punishment for us, pay our price, to bring us back into relationship with him as sons and daughters. So then, will you be the shocking father, joyful and wanting all people to come back into the family? Or will you be like the older brother who is jealous of his father's love for his lost son, not wanting his brother to return and share his inheritance? My prayer for you today is that you will be like the shocking father. And I'd like to finish by telling the story of the impact being shocking can have on people. Gary Ridgway is one of America's worst criminals. He is convicted of a large number of shocking murders. Ridgway showed no emotion at all during all of his court appearances. At the sentencing hearing, the court allowed the victims' families to address Ridgway and also the court. A number of people gave gripping, heartfelt addresses telling of the pain and suffering that Ridgway had caused their family. Now, Ridgway sat there stone-faced during all of these addresses, showing no emotion as the relatives mocked and condemned him with things like, "He is an animal. I wish for him to have a long, suffering, cruel death. He is going to hell, and that's where he belongs." Then Robert Rule, the father of one of the victims, approached the microphone and said this: "Mr. Ridgway, there are people here who hate you. I am not one of them. You have made it difficult for me to live up to what I believe. And that is what God says to do. And that's to forgive. You are forgiven, sir." At this, Gary Ridgway, who had shown no emotion at all throughout all of his court appearances, broke down and cried. See, what Gary Ridgway had done was extremely shocking. He had ruined the lives of so many people, and he rightfully deserved the anger and hostility that he got shown in that courtroom. But what Robert Rule did was even more shocking. He showed the same love that God shows to us. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. This is truly shocking.